Welcome to today's Family Experience, helping your family connect in a world that's pulling families apart. My name is Chuck Hagley. I'm the Executive Director of Project Patch, and I am so glad to be with you today to bring you a real exciting interview. It's one that I've been looking forward to for a very, very long time. Recorded it a little while ago, and it's been my life's been fairly busy, so it's been hard to get the production and all the little details done, but we are here today, and I am really looking forward to the impact that this time together is going to make. You know, the reality as a parent is that what we think it's going to be and what it ends up being is quite a bit different. You know, our days end up being really hard at times, and everyone else makes it look easy. And so you're looking onto other people's lives and say, wow, why is it that it's so hard for me, but it's so easy for other people? And then occasionally there's someone that comes along with a bunch of vulnerability and grace and power and is able to share their life. And he realized that you're not alone. And one of those people that I met a while back is Michelle Cachette. We've written about her earlier. We did a book review about her book, Undone. And at that point, I hinted that we'd get a chance to talk to her. And I did get a chance to record a conversation with her. And that's what I'm bringing you today. For those of you that don't know Michelle, Michelle is a writer. Her newest book is called Undone, a memoir, a story of making peace with an unexpected life. And that's what we're going to talk about today. But she's also a speaker. She's a one speaker that's represented Compassion International, Woman of Faith, Focus on the Family, Proverbs 31, She Speaks, Heart and Home. She's the co-host of one of my favorite podcasts, This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, which is one of the top podcasts out there for business. And she is an excellent communicator. What I love about today's podcast is that if you've ever heard Michelle speak, she's going to sound a little different. And the reason for that is that she's speaking and sharing, even though through the cancer that she's gone through, her voice isn't where she wants it to be, but she's still getting out there and sharing her story. And I'm really grateful that she's doing that for us. And so sit back, enjoy the podcast, and we'll talk to you after that's through. Hey, Michelle, thanks so much for joining me today. I've been looking forward to this since last fall when we met at the SCORE conference. You're a speaker, but one of the things that I just want to start off with is that you have this uncanny ability to connect. And so I am so excited about connecting with you again and really helping our parents also listen in on this conversation. I hope they benefit as we share your story and explore some of the things that you've been through.
Thank you, Chuck. It's so good to be here. I've been looking forward to it as well.
You wrote a book that is just amazing. It's the story of Undone, that unexpected life and making peace with it. As we start this discussion, what did you really think your life would be like? What did you expect and what rules did you think that life would play by?
Well, I can definitely say to begin that I expected something completely different than what I currently have. And that's really the premise of the entire book. I grew up in a fairly ordinary family for the most part, a faith-based family. And my life, even though it wasn't perfect by any means, it was, you know, fairly typical and ordinary. There wasn't any major crises or anything too far out of what you would expect for a normal traditional family. I had one brother, a mom and dad that had been married forever and ever and ever. So I grew up expecting that my life would look very much like that, that if I did all the right things and made all the right choices, then my life would turn out exactly like I predicted it, exactly like I wanted it to. Mm-hmm. So I kind of viewed life and faith and family like a math equation. You know, 2 + 2 = 4. So if I marry the right person and make all the good choices, and if I'm a good person, pardon me, if I'm a good person myself and pray enough, then my life is going to go smoothly. And now, being 43 years old, a parent of 6, I know for a fact that it's just not how it always works.
And what's amazing about your story is that you had this fantasy to a degree. I think all of us have that fantasy is if I do the right things, if I say the right things, then I'll live the dream. And it seems like other people get away with it.
It seems like other people get away with it. I'm starting to discover that for the most part, the vast majority of people portray something different than what they're actually living. And so even though it appears some people get away with that, I think in most cases, that's not the truth. They're just only choosing to expose a very select slice of their life. The more that I am honest about telling my story, the more other people are coming back to me and telling the truth about their own. And I'm finding that the undone story is really far more common than the perfect story. In fact, I have yet to find anybody that's really living the dream.
Yeah, living the dream. But so many times we pursue that dream so hard. And really, your story is, you know, told through the lens of cancer. But really where it starts, as far as the unraveling, if I could call it that, when your life started flipping upside down, was you were a young mom, young son, and found yourself divorced. And you wrote, "I was the pastor's wife before I was Troy's wife, 21 years old and living the dream." And that dream began to unravel.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that was my first taste of the fact that you can make all the right decisions and it can look good on paper and things can still unravel, explode, fall apart, whatever you want to call it. But it can still, your dream can still die. And that was a very hard lesson for me to learn as a young 20-something, especially because I was in the church world and I was in ministry. I was married to a pastor. So there's this assumption that if you're a Christian that and you marry a Christian and you have a Christian family, a faith-based family, that everything should go fine. And that doesn't always happen because we're dealing with humans and individuals that are sinful and things happen sometimes that are outside your realm of expectation. And so that was my first coming to terms with the fact that life doesn't always go according to plan. And it really wrecked me. I mean, it was big. It really kind of shook me to the core and made me question what I believed about God and about life at that point.
The way you write is so that woundedness, that even though you started a new family, and we'll get to the boys and all that together, in a sense, it was, you describe you and Troy and the kids all being together, but still licking your wounds and in a way recovering from that loss and the heartbreak.
Yes, which is so true. And, you know, when you prepare for a second marriage and remarriage, people will tell you that it's going to be hard, but there's still a piece of you, especially those of us that have this fantasy, this dream of a perfect family, there's still a part of you that wants to believe that your story will be different, that you'll be able to get remarried and have a blended family, and you're going to defy all the odds, and your blended family isn't going to be what everybody describes it as to be. It's going to be like a resurrection of the traditional family. And what I came to discover very quickly after remarrying is that you can't take five people who came from a place of pain and disappointment. All of us came from families that broke and fell apart and didn't turn out. You can't take five people that came from that broken place, put them all together in a house, and say happily ever after and expect it to happen just like that. It, you know, we were all very wounded people coming into the second marriage, trying to figure out how to do life together and be a family when we were still very much grieving all that we had lost. And that's what I hadn't anticipated, is all that grief and all those individuals coming into the family with that grief, trying to figure out how to be a family again. And so, you know, there was all kinds of dynamics that came into play in that second family scenario. And then layers over the top of all of that was the grief. And that was a pretty powerful foe to deal with.
Your impulse at that point on how you were going to beat it, what were you relying on to try to redeem this really painful situation? What did you think would bring you that peace?
Well, I went back to my default of hard work. I'm someone that I always was able to, if I could just roll up my sleeves and work really hard, I could fix just about anything. I could make anything happen. But that same, you know, that work ethic is a good thing in a lot of cases, but And it certainly brought some benefit to the blended family scenario, because it means I'm very committed and long-term and I'm loyal. I hang in there. But you can't make other people, you can't make a relationship happen. You can't just force it to work out all the time. And when you have stepchildren and a new husband and you're trying to figure out marriage and trying to figure out parenting and biological child and stepchildren at the same time, it's just complicated. Mm-hmm. And being a perfectionist, hardworking person trying to force it to happen just created an environment that didn't allow the space and the time and the grace for people to just grieve and heal and learn how to do this one day at a time. Mm-hmm. So I learned very quickly that I was a control freak, basically.
Well, and that's such an easy response to it. And what I find, you tell a story about the honeymoon period for your family coming to an end at the happiest place on earth.
Yes,
Would you share that story a little bit, and really how that impacted you to see that your best effort still wasn't going to produce what you wanted it to?
Yes, exactly. Well, Troy and I had decided to take all the boys to Disneyland. This was very, very early in our relationship, and we thought it would be so much fun, right? And, you know, I laugh now because I look back and think that in some way, I'm sure subconsciously, even going to Disneyland was my attempt to try to put the stamp of happy family on top of our blended family, like making ourselves be that traditional family. And so we surprised the boys. We planned this whole trip without letting them know it was going to happen until the day we drove to the airport. So it was a huge surprise. And so many expectations behind that, of course. And we end up at Disneyland, and my husband, Troy, took the two younger boys, Ryan and Jacob, to a ride. And I took the oldest, Tyler, my stepson, on the teacup ride. Mm-hmm. What do you call them?
Yeah, the spinning thing.
Yeah, the spinning teacup ride, whatever it was. He was 9 at the time. So here I'm thinking, oh, this is a perfect moment for me to bond with my stepson, for us to have a moment together, and we're standing in line with all these other families. And it finally comes to be our turn to climb into a teacup. And the woman that works at Disneyland looks at my son and says, you and your mom can go right over there and get into that teacup over there. And so I'm smiling, thinking, oh, you and your mom, isn't this sweet? And there in front of all the other parents at Disneyland, my stepson screams, kind of yells at the top of his voice, she's not my mom. And just that fast, I went from being so proud of myself and the sweet bonding experience I'm having with my stepson to being fully aware of the fact that no matter how hard I may work at this new role of being a mom to my two stepsons, at the end of the day, I will never truly be their biological mother. And that helped force me to face the fact that my role was different. Still important, still valid. It didn't diminish my love for my stepsons, but it was different. And boy, that was hard for me to come to terms with for a long time.
Yeah. And that, why I love that story is because it is such a, I mean, there's just so much happening in that one moment of transition.
You know, exactly.
And to realize that what's interesting from your perspective is that could have been a point of you brat, but instead I sense that you really recognized his longing for things to be what they should have been.
Well, I'd say there's some of both. I mean, it was embarrassing. I would love to say that I'm more noble than that, that I just was fully about his interests, but I'm not quite that noble. So there was some of my own, you know, seriously, I mean, at this point, I'm fulfilling so many of the responsibilities of being a mom without having the rewards of being called the mother, right? So I'm doing all of the mom responsibilities, driving to appointments and helping with homework and doing all the hard mom work without the rewards of being affirmed as a mom. Yeah. And that's very, very hard for a lot of stepmoms. So some in that moment was a sense of injustice. It's just not fair for me. You know, I'm sitting there going as a stepmom. It's really not fair a lot of times in that role. At the same time, I also understand, you know, here you was in Disneyland, and this child, at one point in time, I'm sure hopes to be able to do that kind of trip with his biological mom and dad. That hope for him is gone forever now. Yeah. And so he's here in Disneyland with his dad and this new woman, and there's a ton of loss for him too. So, you know, this was one of those moments, so many things coming into focus, but what was very apparent is there were losses for all of us. Yeah. I mean, we were all in a less than ideal scenario, and what are we going to do about it?
Well, and there's those moments that we come up with that our pockets are just empty. Our toolboxes is worthless, you know, and mm-hmm. what I hear you saying is that you had given him, you know, you'd been there for them. You'd done all the little things. You'd even given Disneyland.
Yeah.
And
that's a pretty big gift, right?
Like, what else can I do? And so mm-hmm. over the next several years, you guys just worked at it.
Oh, worked at it. We still work at it. You know, it's been going on 15 years now that we've been married. Yeah. But just take a moment and cheer for that, because when it's a second marriage, you have to celebrate every year.
Yeah. You know, if you have a chance to listen, we just recorded a fantastic podcast just a couple weeks ago with Gil and Brenda Stewart from Restored and Remarried. And they
a
math equation for blended families. You take the number of years you've been married, multiply it by the number of kids. And so when you're looking at 15 years with three kids, that's 45 years of marriage together.
Hey, no wonder I'm so tired.
Congratulations. but, you know, here's what I think is so amazing about your story is that as soon as you guys find some sort of rhythm, something else comes, you know, another wave comes and knocks you down. And really the teen years, and we're talking with a lot of parents here that are listening in that, you know, the teen years come along and suddenly, you know, it's harder again. And your son, you guys had a lot of conflict, ended up with him leaving for a point of time.
Yes. And I should premise this by saying all three of our teenage boys, both my two stepsons as well as my biological son, all had struggles through their teen years. And now on the back side of it, I can see how much of that was fairly typical for the teen years. But mm-hmm. boy, when you're going through it, you really feel like your family's falling apart and that you're the only one that's going through it. It was so hard. So yeah, when my oldest stepson was 16, and all of my boys, for some reason, seemed to lose their minds at about 16 and a half, just so you know.
Yeah, gone.
That seemed to be the magic number in our house, 16 and a half. But my oldest son, when he hit that age, he just, you know, we had that blended family scenario until our oldest two boys lived 1 week at our house, 1 week at their biological mother's house. And so we had this constant parenting schedule that was complicated and mm-hmm. it was hard. It was harder for them than anybody, but it was hard for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just hard because your family is changing dynamics every week. And at some point, he decided he didn't like our rules. My husband and I are, you know, pretty structured. We don't think rules are a bad thing. We don't think boundaries are a bad thing. But when you're 16 and a half, you can't stand boundaries.
Yeah.
And yeah, so he decided he didn't like them. And so he wanted to go somewhere where he had fewer boundaries and fewer restrictions on his life. And so one day after school, he just didn't come home. Hmm. And that launched us into another season that lasted about 6 months, where we became a family of four because our oldest son just did not come around at all. He was with another family. Well, with his biological mom, with another family member. And boy, that was a whole nother level of complication. When your dream has always been to have a happy family, what do you do with that?
Yeah.
And what I did was basically assume it was all my fault, mm-hmm. that I must have not been a good enough mom. Otherwise, if I would have been a good enough mom, he wouldn't have had to leave.
Yeah.
And so that launched us into a new season where we really had to process the fact that teenagers, even though we as parents are not perfect, they're not perfect either. And they make decisions sometimes that we don't agree with. And sometimes the best thing you can do, not always, but sometimes the best thing you can do is let them live out the consequences of their choices. Mm-hmm.
And you tell the story in the book about the prodigal son, the prodigal mm-hmm. father, and that story. And that I think really launches into the next question, because in a sense, all these losses really started to add up, you know, mm-hmm. and you went, you share, you know, kind of a period in which you were really questioning whether you had anything to give as a speaker.
Yes.
You know, your life was undone in so many ways. Your family wasn't as successful as you wanted it to be. All these things happening, you know, and I've felt myself, you know, I've imposed sentences on myself just because I feel like I'm not hitting the mark, you know, just feeling mm-hmm. like a fraud, feeling like mm-hmm. my life's not together enough to have a voice. So I've avoided ministry, relationships, connection. I mean, I've put myself in kind of a timeout, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was kind of that where you were teetering on, but you really kind of pulled out of it. How did you discover your new voice, you know, that included all these brokenness?
Well, you know, gosh, it was a very long process because, you know, when you are divorced and remarried, especially in the church world, it comes with quite a stigma. You know, one of the most sacred relationships covenants in the Bible is that between a man and a wife. Mm-hmm. And so when you are living the fallout from that broken covenant, it's very much a lesser ideal. It's not what God intended. And so there's this sense of that because I'm living in this imperfect scenario, because I'm living in less than the ideal, then something is wrong with me and God can't use me. This isn't what God wanted. So that means I'm too far beyond his arm of grace and too far beyond his ability to redeem. And so for a number of years, I felt like the fact that I was divorced and then the fact that I was remarried in a blended family, I believe that excluded me from being able to offer anything to the kingdom of God. Mm-hmm. And over time, however, I started to realize that the flaw or the fallacy behind that is that any of us would ever be worthy of offering anything to the kingdom of God. I mean, ultimately, aren't we all sinners? Aren't we all in progress? Aren't we all dealing with our own humanity every day? And so assuming that divorce disqualified me, the implication was that before that, somehow I was perfect enough to bring something to the table. But the truth is that all of us are fully dependent on grace. Mm-hmm. There's not one of us that doesn't need the blood of Christ. And so I started to realize that my greater flaw wasn't necessarily the divorce. My greatest flaw that I was arrogant enough to think that I was good enough on my own before that.
Wow.
And so when I started to understand grace a little bit more and accept the fact that all of us are outside of the holiness of God, then I realized that the fact that God allows any of us to participate in what he's doing is nothing but a gift.
Yeah.
And I am not proud of the fact that I'm divorced. I don't feel any need to brag about being remarried. Mm-hmm. I am just very fully aware of the fact that I am desperately dependent on the grace of God, and he has offered it. And I see evidence throughout the Bible from Genesis to Revelation of how he is a God who uses very broken people that are living in less than ideal scenarios, and he uses them anyway because that is the love and the grace of God that we have. And so I say this over the course of just a couple minutes, but that's been a journey of years. Yeah. And I've only come to those conclusions again because of the mercy of God to teach them to me. And honestly, learning them the hard way. I would have never come to this place of having a deeper understanding of the grace of God if I hadn't had to come face to face with the fact that I am a broken, imperfect woman. And although I never would wish for divorce and remarriage for anyway, the fact that I've had to wrestle with that and blended family and broken teenagers continues to be the greatest teacher about the grace of God.
Michelle, that is so encouraging because, you know, as a parent, it's it's so easy to just feel like, you know, what, who am I? You know, it's so hard, you know, even in marriage, every day is so hard. And so
I make mistakes every single day. I mean, I lose my cool. I get impatient. I'm too rigid some days, too flexible some days, you know, all that. I mean, we do this every day. We try so hard. We have great intentions, but we're imperfect people trying to parent little imperfect people. So it's just a recipe for disaster sometimes.
Well, but the bravery to be able to say that, you know, to because that's where the strength is, I mean, when we're suffering quietly, especially with the voices that are in our own heads that are so painful to us, you know, to finally step out and you know, have the bravery that you showed and to be able to speak of these things out loud, to be able to write them down on pages, and then to start hearing the other voices, you know, of people really getting strength from that and being able to break free from some of the things that they were facing, you know, hear a different voice. To me, that's so powerful. You know, I've got some things on the paper that I wanted to delve with, and cancer is one of them, but guess what? We're going to run out of time on cancer. And and your story is that cancer brings terror to your life.
Yeah, it brings a whole nother level of fear, especially in the whole family scenario, because we have such a desire to fulfill our role as moms and dads and husbands and wives. And so cancer threatens to take that away from us.
So in the midst of you trying to tell yourself everything's going to be all right, but feeling like everything's going to be horrible, how did you process that with your kids?
Well, as honestly and age appropriately as we possibly could. You know, at the time of the first diagnosis within November of 2010, my boys were, oh goodness, let's see, about, I think, 18, 17, and 13. So they were old enough that we could have honest conversations and, you know, tell the truth about it. And, of course, the 13-year-old was more tender to it because he was at a younger age where he was far more dependent on me and my involvement in his day-to-day life. But, you know, we just chose to deal with it as a family. And thank heavens at that point, my older boys had really started to turn a corner and we had reconnected in relationship. And I should say right now, they're doing so well. I'm so proud of them. But, you know, just dealing with it as a family. But, you know, the interesting thing about cancer journey, you know, it affects everybody. But the person that is dealing with the diagnosis, it's really their story that they're having to come to terms with. And so it creates some interesting dynamics when you add a physical illness on top of everything else, because you once again are going through grief, you know, where you have five people that are individually grieving and dealing with it in different ways.
The physical scars, the emotional, I know talking with you, you sound really different than when we chatted and, you know, different from the podcast that I've heard you on before. And that must be a struggle to know that, you know, there's some outward things that are, you know, have manifested themselves now that make it so hard for you to do what you want to do.
Yeah, it's been probably, well, I mean, there's so many losses related to this, but this last time I had, this is my third diagnosis, so it was a second recurrence. So this one was more severe than the other two times. And so it's left me with a lot of physical scars, physical fallout from the surgery and the treatment and everything else. And that's been a huge personal loss for me, coming to terms with not speaking the same, not being able to eat the same, losing some of my taste, not to mention the fact that my body is pretty cut up from all the surgery. Mm-hmm. However, what's interesting, it's not like I'm trying to put a red bow on this because I'm still very much in progress with it, but it's interesting that these physical evidences of how I'm different now are just, there's just more of that visible evidence of the undone life. All of us are living with different scars in ways that we're not the same. All of us go through different losses and we're different. So it's just not always as obvious as mine are right now. And so in some ways, having these visible evidences of the undone life are giving me even more opportunity to connect with people that are in their undone stories. Did we tend to look at people who look too perfect and assume that they can't really relate with us? And even though I've always been pretty honest about telling my story, now I have physical evidence for it, and I'm finding that it creates unique opportunities for people to lean in and for us to connect about those things. So, you know, they're even here, even in this kind of what some would call a horrific or worst case scenario, even here, I'm seeing evidences, beginning evidences of how God can use even this. I mean, even this is not impossible. And boy, it's given us great opportunity to talk to our children, all of them, about how life doesn't always go according to plan. But ultimately, it's up to you to decide if you're going to be a victim of it or if you're going to be someone who allows it to make you stronger and more courageous and more aware of other people and more loving and serving with those around you. And so we have conversations about that all the time. It's really up to us to decide how we choose to use it.
You know, as we end our time here, I'd love to go on and on and on like we have
too.
In the past because we have so much. I mean, there's just so much power here. But, you know, what surprised me about your story and one of the things that I've been speaking a lot about, especially with teens, is just the amazing danger of two things, people pleasing and perfectionism. At the end of the day, really your story is about breaking the myth, or as you call it, the poison of perfection. You know, instead of the perfect marriage, the perfect family, the perfect health, the perfect results with your kids, the perfect career, instead you had this real life. You know, can you share with me really what you've come to understand as far as the poison of perfection and really the freedom that you've discovered from truly belonging, you know, in this place of faith?
Yeah, well, when you go through crisis after crisis, you know, kind of hard story after hard story, like mine has been one thing after another. My friends tell me, oh my gosh, can it get any worse? I'm like, please don't say that because yes, it can. when you go through that, I mean, at some point, you're going to have to let go of your need of having all your ducks lined up in a row because it's just not happening. And my particular story was one hard thing after another that has forced me to wrestle with my own overdriven need for everything to be perfect. You know, I spent so much of my life, I'm a firstborn type A personality, I spent so much of my life letting my happiness be dependent on everything going according to plan. And that's not realistic. And it's also not a very fun way to live. It's just, if you are always waiting for things to fall in place, for your children to make the right choices and your husband to be the perfect person and for your career to always go the way you want it to, you're going to be chronically disappointed. And in addition to that, not only are you going to be disappointed, but you're going to make it very hard for people to even be around you. Because what happens when we come to need that kind of perfection is that we end up having these expectations of those around us to always make us happy, and they can't do that. Your children are not always going to make good choices. Your husband is not always going to meet your needs. Your wife isn't. You know, we can go on and on. So to learn to have more of this open-handed approach to life where you you work hard, you give your best, but you're also open to the fact that some things are not always going to work out. Learning to do that is really what grace is all about. You know, we talk about grace, but living it out is a whole lot harder than talking about it. So I came to the conclusion over the last few years that really this expectation of a perfect life, this expectation of a comfortable, easy life, is really more a product of Western culture. in most of the world, there is not this expectation that you're going to wake up and have this wonderful, happy, ideal life. I've traveled to Africa and Haiti, Dominican Republic, Mexico, different places like that. And most people that I have run into there have zero expectation of a comfortable life. In fact, they expect suffering and hardship and difficulty. So really, we have gotten caught up in this Western culture, this media-driven, media-rich culture in having this perfect life. I call it like the Facebook effects, right? We work so hard to create this image of happiness, and we look for it. And it's really, I think, poisoned our ability to embrace a real life. You know, even reality TV is edited for the television audience.
It is.
Right?
Yeah.
It's not really real. And so we have lost touch with the ability to be okay with things being less than perfect. And if we can do that, oh, that's really the means to finding peace in our life. The Bible says so clearly, in this world, you will have trouble. I mean, it's not a question of if, it's will. You will have trouble. But the second part of that story is what Jesus goes on to say, but take heart, I've overcome the world. So we need to start having that mentality that, yes, this life is going to have trouble. That means kids are not going to always do what we expect them to. Sometimes they're going to be very troubled. In fact, sometimes they will go off and have an adult life that is completely off the rails. That's going to happen sometimes. But that doesn't mean that life cannot be good, or that life doesn't have purpose, or that there's not a God that's worth believing and following, even in those undone places.
Wow. You know, it's been a true gift. You know, your gift of vulnerability, your sharing from your life, and really the your words, you have a skill with words that I think God has given you to help us understand, you know, some things that hopefully most of us will never go through, all the things that you've gone through, but
yeah, I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
But at the end of the day, you know, the reality is that we're all in a process,
you know, all of us.
And rather than fixating on the outcome, to be able to see God in the present moment is such a valuable lesson. And so, you know, I've benefited so much. I know there's parents out there that have. What I know is that you've created a bunch of resources. I mean, we talked about the book, but you've got your podcast. Tell me about the new video series that you're doing real quick, because I think our audience would love to see that.
Yes. Yeah, so I just came out of pretty massive intensive radiation chemotherapy just a few months ago. And when I, as well as a couple major surgeries that required week-long hospital stays. So in the middle of all of that, I came out of treatment and surgery, came home on Valentine's Day, February 14th. And after that, a few weeks after that, I had a video crew and a team of people come into my house, for the sake of recording some videos in the middle of that very raw and dumb place. There were moments that I thought that I had lost my mind. I shouldn't do that because I was very sick. I didn't look very good. I was very much in the thick of recovery. However, the heart behind it is too often we wait for everything to wrap up and look nice and neat and be kind of have the happy ending at the end of the story before we're brave enough to talk about it. But I don't think talking from our places of perfection really connects with people in real life. And so I wanted to create some videos in the middle of that kind of raw and dumb place, because the truth is that a lot of people who are listening right now are in really hard, very raw and dumb places. And I would do them no service by coming with a nice, neat red bow. But I can serve them much better if I can speak from the hard places. And so this video series, there's a total of 6 different video clips that we're releasing once a week throughout July and August. And then you have access to the entire conversation, which is just under an hour long, where we talk about a lot of hard things, like how to deal with disappointment and can God use imperfect people. And then another resource that I put together is called the 7-day challenge to making peace with unexpected loss. And what I found is after people read the book Undone, they really wanted some practical help to deal with their own undone stories. Because one thing that comes from this book is, even though I talk about kids and teenagers and family and cancer, it really connects with everybody in their own done story. So even though my details are one way, it connects with everyone in their own undone place. So this 7-day challenge is another free resource. All of these are free resources. They just kind of practically help you walk through your own undone story. And you can sign up for that on my website and get those delivered right to your inbox.
And the website is Michelle Cushette, MichelleCushatt.com.
Correct. Okay. Correct. That's it.
Well, Michelle, it has been such a gift. We hope that, we can bless you also and be an encouragement to you. And really, as our audience thinks about the things that they've done, really encourage them to continue to connect with us. Hopefully, this has just been something that's stirred our hearts and we can continue to walk the next step. So thank you, Michelle.
Thank you. That's my hope, too. It's been such a pleasure, Jack. I appreciate it.
I'm really grateful for the time that Michelle spent with us. Every time I've spoken to her, I leave the conversation more energized, more hopeful, and I hope that you have also. Really encourage you to connect with Michelle. Once again, her website is Michelle Cushatt, MichelleCushatt.com. You'll be able to access all sorts of the great things that she's done, like her book, Undone. Also, you'll find the video series that we mentioned that was taken during her recovery period. And you'll also find that 7-day plan that I think you'll really be encouraged by. And so all these things are out there. And the reality is, as parents, it's easy to become overwhelmed. But Michelle is a resource that will really leave you energized. And I'm hoping that you connect with her and get the books, get involved with her content. You know, we are actually giving away 2 books also. So the publisher sent 2 of them to us and I'd like to get them into your hands. Way to do that is actually go to our blog today.thefamilyexperience.org. Once you get there, you'll see this episode here for The Undone Life with Michelle Cushatt. And when you go into that, there's going to be a quick little survey. There'll be a link there for a survey that you can take that really helps us understand a little bit more of what you're going through as a parent, some of the ups and downs, some of the things that you'd really like to see us cover. And so encourage you to do that. We'll be picking 2 random people from that. Well, we'll be picking 2 winners randomly from that, and hopefully you're one of them. You know, the final thing I want to leave you with is that working with our kids really can be hard sometimes, especially when our kids are showing a stubborn streak, when they're not doing what we want them to do, when they're pushing back on things that seem so simple to us. Parenting stubborn kids is hard, and especially when they're more stubborn than we are. And so it's one of the things that I've really been struggling with, looking for some answers. And so I put together a short ebook. By short, I mean actually 5 pages. So it's something you can sit down and read really quickly. But it's an ebook with some thoughts around parenting stubborn kids, some resources that I found helpful, and I think you will too. And that's something I'm giving away for free. You know, all you have to do is go to our blog, today.thefamilyexperience.org, and there you'll see an advertisement for it on the right-hand side. Click on that. All we need is that you need to submit your email and your first name, and what you're doing is subscribing to updates from our blog, our podcast, the resources that we have, and I know you'll be encouraged by those things, and you'll get a chance to get that free ebook. And so I encourage you to do that. Once again, that's today.thefamilyexperience.org, and there you'll see the subscription button as well as information about that ebook. You know, I don't know exactly what you need as a parent right now, but I know your kids need you. I know your kids are out there and they're struggling with lots of different things. They're facing a world in which plans aren't going as well as they thought they would. You understand as a parent that things don't always work. But now go out there, connect with your family. We can help at thefamilyexperience.org.